everyone, welcome to This Week in Games 282, where we read and distill all the weekly game industry news so you don't have to. All right, here's what we're going to cover today. We actually have a ton of stuff, so this is just scratching the surface. Google I.O. updates. Mishka's obsessed with Web3 investments yet again, so we're going to hear about that. Squadbusters passes 40 million pre-regs, but someone else is gunning for them. Netflix's virtual theme park opens in Roblox and triggers the shit out of Cress. And Xbox President Sarah Bond's interview with No News News. So all of that is coming up. So I am Jen Donahoe, strategic marketing consultant at Beta Hat and Jade Inferno. And today we have on our illustrious Twig panel, Philip Black, game economist at Game Economist Consulting.
Hey, hey.
Eric Kress, principal at Gossamer Consulting Group.
What's happening, folks?
Founder of Deconstructor of Fun, king of the supper clubs,
yeah.
Mishka Katkoff is back.
I want to say the Theo Von thing that we were just talking about before that, but I will not, because we will not beep it. So, hello, everybody.
Yes, please no. Let's. We have enough cursing and inappropriate things on this podcast.
This would be highly inappropriate.
All right. Phil, I think you want to go first. You love Eurovision. So what happened?
It's a part of my citizenship. What did Will Ferrell call this for Americans? He called this like Cirque du Soleil meets the Olympics, meets like the UN or something.
Meets American Idol?
Meets American Idol. Also.
Okay. Congrats to Switzerland. They took it home this year. And of course, Sweden, top 10 finish again. They're so successful that we have an affirmative action program for Norwegians. We actually had two Norwegian twins enter for us and compete, which is a little head-scratching. But yeah, go our continent.
What the fuck are we talking about?
Eurovision.
It's a big thing.
The American mind wouldn't understand.
American.
Who cares?
It's American Idol for meets the Olympics of
and
Europe.
Pride. It meets Pride Super Bowl. Also. It's like the biggest.
Oh, it's like American Idol?
Okay. Yeah, so it meets Pride because
it's more than that.
A non-binary person became the first winner.
It's another just copy of the United States with their popular media, just copy and paste, right?
No,
because you can't come up with anything on your own.
No,
that's exactly what it is.
American Idol's
been around forever.
American Idol's Dutch. Masked Singer's Dutch, I think.
It's old Europe trying to like copy America again.
I like how Chris had no idea what this is, and he's like, they're copying the US.
Because it's a non-event, because American Idol created this shit, dude.
No,
you guys are just copying it.
This is nothing. That's factually incorrect.
Okay.
This is so incorrect. We're
moving on because I did not anticipate that the biggest controversy on our podcast would be Eurovision. I thought it was going to be Mishka getting your opinion about what Ethan likes to play games with and scantily clad anime women. We've missed you the last few weeks.
I listened every minute. Well, the first take is I'm 30, almost 39 year old man. I don't watch cartoons. So, I don't care about that. But overall, like anime has been disturbing to me since 2013. That's when we went to Japan to prepare for the launch of Clash of Clans. And I vividly remember us sitting in a creative agency, local creative agency. They were like, okay, guys, we got this. Well, they didn't speak that way. This is how I'm hearing. I'm hearing everything in like an American accent. They said, we got you. We have perfect localized marketing campaigns. And they brought these images of what I would consider 12-year-old girls with double Ds. And I was just looking at the marketing. I'm like, this is disturbing. Naturally, we did not do that. So I was against this type of visuals back then. And I remain of the same point in like 11 years later. So
Ethan and Matei are all, this is mainstream. Look at Nikkei, whatever. Dude, that thing did like less than 2 million downloads, right? That's not mainstream, guys. That is like super petty type folks that want to see little girls with big boobs. It's fucking gross.
Well, anime just has been expanding like what I've been seeing like just from the side. It has been definitely expanding. It's less disturbing. Violent for sure, but not like over sexualized. So I would say they're right in many sense that it's becoming more accepted in the West with
the problem is that it may evolve and broaden its appeal, but then it's not even anime anymore, right? It's something different and something new. So
Western anime, as they call it.
I'll concede on that, but the fundamentals of this thing are just gross. All right,
moving on. Just like anything, there are extremes. What's not extreme is that Games Beat is happening in LA next week, May 20th to 21st. There's a very cool Women in Games breakfast on May 21st that morning. I've gone the last few years. This event is always amazing. The network is amazing. So hopefully everyone can show up. It supports VentureBeat and GamesBeat and Dean Takahashi, which we don't do enough to support our game press. I don't think we are actually game press. We're just a bunch of yahoos from the game industry who get on a podcast and try to pretend like we're press. Let's support the actual press. They're how many of us find out about the industry. All right, Mishka, what else have you got going on?
Shilling on my part. So I wrote a piece. Finally, I've noticed that I haven't been even writing so much because we have so many people writing great contributions on the blog. But I wrote a piece called The Three Game Industry Trends to Watch in 2024. So in short, the trends are right-sizing, gamers play less time and fewer games, as well as AI will unlock productivity and lead to further job losses. If you're interested in this, go take a look. What are the three trends, in my opinion? Very much looking forward to hear the comments. And this is based on the conversation that I had with Newzoo's head of consulting, Ben Porter, who came on a podcast. So this is kind of like my takeaway, but I suggest to everybody to listen to that podcast because you'll get it right from the horse's mouth and then you draw your own conclusion. These are just my own conclusion. And then the shilling part, we had a supper club last week. I'm an easily impressed person. And this whole idea came from Lightspeed's Moritz and Goldman's Hamal.
I'm going to just drop a couple of those names.
No. I'm not name dropping. I'm just naming them to give them credit. And they invited me to this dinner, and it had this really cool concept where people didn't talk about the industry or the games per se, but they talked more about personal stuff. And I was like, hey, let's give it a go. So we had a first supper club here in Helsinki. A lot of the companies that we talked good about and more critical came on. So it was more like studio directors and GMs and MDs and so forth.
Like just a friendly dinner? Like you're souping it up like it's something special. You just hung out and just didn't talk about work.
So I'll give an example now that we're using Stockholm as an example. So there was a VC dinner over there. Play Ventures arranged that. But they were nevertheless like the studio heads of the top studios right there. So the head of studio of Arrowhead hadn't really met the studio head of another studio, let's say DICE, I don't know, and the ones. And this kind of atmosphere kind of brought them together. Of course, they've heard about each other. They kind of know how each other looks, but they never really spend time. And the whole idea of a supper club is kind of bringing people together from different studios to really connect. That's it. Nothing more. So we're trying to do them. I got many requests after posting that photo on LinkedIn where people were asking to support this in their own city. So you name a city, everybody wants to have a supper club there. So we'll take this on the road. I'm hoping that Chris, Phil, and you, Jen, will host some. And of course, Laura out of Seattle, that we can host more of these supper clubs. They're fun. They're a great way to connect. Nobody talks about IDFA. Nobody talks about all that, the jazz. People just talk about themselves and their lives. So supper clubs, that's on the menu.
Nice. Okay.
You know, it's amazing what you have time for there, Mishka. You haven't published it forever. You haven't been on the podcast for months. And then, you could do this fucking dinner,
One more shill. Now that you said you haven't been in podcast. So a couple of weeks ago, I was in Paris to record a podcast with Voodoo.
Of course. He's in Paris. Of course he's in Paris.
It's like you flying to San Diego. It's not that far. Anyways, we did the most high production value podcast that we've ever done before. There was two camera guys and a lady that cut in between, and our noses were powdered in between conferences. Like, we need to take a break to powder your nose. So let's see how that comes out. Trying something new. If that's a concept that works, we'll do more of these high quality ones. If it doesn't, we gave it a go. So that's coming out. A beautiful podcast out of Paris.
Peak performance it is.
All right, moving on to corrections. Actually, it's a little bit more of a clarification. So last week we were talking about Steam's advanced access versus early access. So because I hadn't had a chance to really dig in and understand what we were talking about, let me just give a little bit of clarity. So early access is what is a beta testing tool. So this is getting access to a game, well before it is released. Advanced access gives players 2 to 4 days for players to play a game ahead of full release. So there is a little bit of a difference in timing on this.
This is EA's old program. You remember they used to run this with some of their premium games, like Anthem had this, where if you got a deluxe edition, you could play the game for 7 days ahead of time.
Yeah.
This is essentially Steam giving that a brand, because EA never had a brand for that, nothing to really rally around and like have a clear, consistent player benefit for this feature. And it's an amazing feature because it literally costs nothing. it costs nothing just to say 7 days. So the question is like, okay, why not 14 days? Why not 30 days? I think there's some interesting questions to optimize there.
Yeah, and from my understanding, that was the only really value prop of owning the subscription for EA, was getting early access to the game and getting a head start against everyone else, as well as some discounts on currency and stuff. But that was the primary thing. It was like a frequent flyer mile thing.
Yeah.
And that it was relatively successful for the core gamers, that, but it didn't bring any new people in. It was correct, just for existing gamers.
If I remember correctly too, like Call of Duty used to let you play certain maps ahead of everyone else. It was a way to really sell the deluxe editions and get pre-orders in and things like that. And so instead of it being early access, what it was called advanced access on Steam is how I understand it. All right.
Nothing about Helldivers?
Do we want to say anything about the Helldivers?
No more. Nothing about Helldivers. Did really well.
Yeah.
It actually did. I think I read that it is Sony's fastest to 12 million unit seller, like something like that. Like it is just crushing it in the numbers. First, because Sony had their earnings report, which we'll get into a second. They actually had some changes at the top. All right.
DAU is still declining. That I want to mention. Like
okay,
sales, well, like a lot fair. Of the reports, when you get media reports of premium games, a lot of the times they quote sales, which is a running sum. It's a cumulative sum. But when you look at the active user base on Steam numbers, it is still declining. The story for Helldivers is not yet closed, I would say. It hasn't cemented its position yet. It needs a little bit more time of stability to be able to prove that it's going to be a regular top 20 Steam contender, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, where's Pal World, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, I think this has more legs, though. This has more legs. This is a serious live service
play. I'm just saying, like, that was the soup du jour for sales for a while.
I think
both discounted products.
But isn't the big difference how Helldivers has really innovated on live service? I mean, to me, Pal World wasn't, it was a very small studio and they didn't really plan on live service for that game. But Helldivers is really driving everything with how it's approaching live service and the co-op of like, your identity is you are in this army and you are actually, you have to show up to support everybody for community-based goals, or else, you know, you're not going to unlock the next major thing in the game.
We haven't talked enough about Helldivers. We should do a special segment.
Yeah, we'll do a deep dive.
A deep dive on it. I think it's a product that's worth discussing, and we should do more of it. We haven't done a ton on the podcast.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay. A lot to go in my market segment, or kind of the high-level segment. So Google I.O. I put a link in the Deconstructor of Fun Slack channel. There were a lot of announcements for Google Play and what's going on with mobile. So here's just kind of a couple of them. I'm not going to go deep. So they announced a new discovery feature for apps, new ways to acquire users, updates to play points, and other enhancements for developer-facing tools like Google Play SDK Console and Play Integrity API. Google Play Games on PC extends to 140 countries. Custom store listings based on what players search for. Deep link patching without having to update the app, and more. So TechCrunch has a great summary. There's an Android blog post that covers everything. Oh, also, I did want to mention this. You know, Chris, we've talked about UPI and payments in India. The Play Store commerce team now includes support for UPI in India and Pix in Brazil. The ability for parents to approve purchases for kids within a Google Family setup. I think this exists in Apple today. I remember doing this for our kids. And in India, the ability to ask a family member or a friend outside of your family group to purchase an app or an in-app product. The latter is handled by sharing a payment link through a text or an email. So lots of, you know, really good payment features that might see some increases in countries that we often call mice nuts. Right, Chris?
Well, still mice nuts, but yeah.
Okay. App Love and revenue increased by 48% year over year to $1.06 billion in Q1 24 as the company continues to see significant growth in its ad business.
By the way, I think the ads business was up 90%. So yeah. Just to be clear.
No, and you're right. I took that part out because I was like, I felt like I was going too long on this, but it's all driven by ads, and the game side of the business was not growing that much. However, that's where they get all their data. if they didn't have the game side of the business, they wouldn't get the data to fuel the ad side. So we have to remember that they are interconnected, and that allows them to be successful. So AppLovin CEO Adam
Pierogi,
the super gangster, said that one of his goals for the future of growth was to extend its services outside of games. He later noted, however, that the company still has no interest in brand advertising and instead focusing on performance-based advertisers. Quote, there is nothing that limits our models to just gaming, he said. By expanding into web-based marketing and e-commerce, we expect our AI models to improve with added demand diversity. So, Cress, oh my God, your prediction of fingerprinting killing them is not happening because of AI. I have to believe the predictive modeling of AI on the back end and what I just mentioned, the fact that they're using the data of their game publishers is driving their success. Okay, where am I wrong?
No. Okay, I will admit that I was wrong, 100% wrong on AppLovin's demise, but that was not because, well, partially because of their technology, but primarily because Apple's kind of pulled back on going after IP tracking or fingerprinting or whatever. But luckily, I changed my view, not early enough, but enough to make people's money. Like, basically, it was long AppLovin, short Unity last year, right? That was kind of the call, and that has worked up to today. It's like, it's a crazy trade. Like, if you had done it, you would have been, I think, I can't even remember. I know what the percentage is high, but AppLovin just destroyed Unity and everyone else in the ecosystem. I mean, Facebook obviously is doing really well in Google. And so if Apple's pulling back because they can't really go after fingerprinting anymore because they don't have the runway anymore, their business is kind of shit right now, and they don't want to upset and mess up the overall ecosystem, not much less even gaming, but everyone else, they're not going to do it. So it looks like AppLovin's in the driver's seat for the foreseeable future until when Unity gets their shit together. Adam's a gangster, dude.
Yeah.
Like, the guy just, he bet on the right horse. He went after this, like, 100%. They are owning this performance marketing segment.
So. Truly. When you look at the top providers of UA, AppLovin is in the top three, if not the top person, the top company for most of the tier one countries on both platforms.
Well, all I'm seeing is, like, them taking, like, 70% of all UA For example, puzzle companies. It's insane what's happening and how good that channel is and how weak some of the channels have gotten during the same amount of time. My question more is, like, would Adam, since he's such a gangster, would he buy now Unity?
Oh.
Like, just for the fuck of
but
it?
But why? I mean,
just because they pissed him off, like, a few years ago.
I mean, they would just shut it down, right?
I mean, they would shut the, essentially, the Iron Source part. Or just consolidate the clients and everything,
yeah,
and just clean it up and have that. And the second part was, I'm not sure if this is true or I'm quite sure this is true. But what I'm hearing is AppLovin, I think they announced this a long time ago that they wanted to sell the games portfolio. And to my understanding, they're still trying to sell this, right? Am I wrong? Am I just imagining things?
I don't know. But to my earlier point, I don't know how you do that, because that's the only way that you get, in a sense, first party data. Like, that's how they're training their systems, is their internal studio. And that might be one thing when you think about Unity and you have access to the engine and you have access. I mean, that's the only thing that's kind of helping level play right now.
No. Okay. I made this point on the podcast years ago, and I want to make this point again. Publishers do not allow Unity to track their fucking player behavior because they're using the engine. Dude, that just doesn't fucking happen, right? I mean, it was such a misinformation around John Riccitiello back in the day, and selling that idea. That's just not the way it works. Sure, some people opt into that, maybe, right, on the low end, but there's not people that are not going to share their fucking user data because they have the engine. This is ridiculous. It's a ridiculous assumption, and it's been debunked,
okay,
like, recently, right, like, the last couple, like, last 6 months, too. This is bullshit.
So maybe it's not the engine, but there are things that are being shared. I mean, that's what's going on at AppLovin. It's not engine-based, but it's something else.
I want to make a prediction. This is just a wild one. I want to just say this. AppLovin sells their game portfolio and acquires Unity.
Okay.
That way they're out of games and they're purely in tech. Out of content and purely in tech.
Okay.
That's it.
Well, there you go. Good job.
There you go.
All right, moving on. I could talk about this for a while. Yeah. I just don't want to
Moving on. there were a couple of research reports out around teens or Gen Alpha in gaming. So I posted a link in the Deconstructor of Fun Slack with a couple of takeaways. Some that I found that were interesting, 85% of U.S. teens say they play video games, and about 4 in 10 do so daily. 40% identify as a gamer. Can you imagine, Chris, back in the day when it was like,
Jesus,
you were a jock, you were a goth, you were a cool kid. If you identified as a gamer back then, we would have been like taken out back and gotten our asses kicked.
That's right. It's like identifying as an anime fan today.
Good callback. Well done. I like that. That's the quote of the show so far. Well, maybe this leads into teens see both positive and negative side effects to video games from problem solving. And then they actually make friends. I saw my kids actually make a lot of friends on the negative side to harassment and sleep loss. I also saw that the kids sneaking their iPads in and playing.
This is not meant to be a flex at all. My son has literally dated three girls that he met playing video games, including Fortnite, right? Like, it is the social hub of this next generation. It is weird. My wife cannot get over that, you know, like, but I get it. I get it. But it's crazy.
It is. No, I agree with you. I saw the same thing with my kids. All right. So a couple of mini segments, transmedia of the week, because, you know, we love talking about this. And by the way, it's happening all the time where we're seeing video game properties show up as TV media. And by TV, could be streaming or movies. So there's a new Angry Birds animated series coming to Amazon Prime on May 21st. Tomb Raider, another Tomb Raider, is coming to Amazon Prime after Fallout's success. You can imagine Amazon's like, hey, everybody, doors open. If you got a video game IP, bring it. And then Free Fire, Japanese anime, spinoff coming from Garena. So a lot coming there. So cool collaborations of the week, because it's fun to talk about this stuff. I really think that there is, like, this is the new marketing strategy is, okay, who can I collaborate with each quarter so that I can bring in a different kind of audience? And it's kind of built in UA, leveraging both brands. Overwatch and Porsche launches on May 15th. There's like a Porsche-inspired mech for D.Va, one of the heroes. Man City footballer and EA FC cover star Haaland is now in Clash of Clans. So there's a great creative spot that was like live action combined with that amazing 3D that they do on Clash of Clans. This is what Supercell has always been known for in the marketing circles. I can only imagine that that was like a $3 million plus just for the actual creative, not necessarily for the sponsorship. I mean, we might be looking at a $3 to $5 million collaboration that's going on. This is expensive stuff. And then the most triggering collaboration of the week, and we're going to get into this a little bit later, is Netflix and Roblox team up for Next World virtual theme park. If you want to hear a famous Chris rant, hang on for a few more minutes. This podcast is brought to you by Heroic Labs. You've heard of Heroic Labs by now, and we keep talking about them because in today's mature market, you need every edge to be successful. Rather than spending those precious company dollars on building game tech, focus on building your game and shipping it. Get it into your players' hands faster and grow your community. Heroic Labs is a battle-tested partner and friend of the podcast. Their tech enables you to be flexible, creative, and scale for success. Heroic Labs has your tech stack covered. Whether you're looking for a world-class back-end server, an amazing game development framework, fantastic live ops tooling, or reliable mass scalability, Heroic Labs has solutions for all of these challenges. It's not just us at Deconstructor of Fun praising Heroic Labs. The company works with some of the world's biggest publishers on the most beloved games. Focus on your game, save a lot of money, and avoid tech risks with Heroic Labs. This podcast is brought to you by Sensor Tower. Sensor Tower has acquired mobile analytics company Data AI, formerly known as We All Know and Love App Annie. Four things you should know. Significant advancement, number one. This acquisition represents a major step forward for Sensor Tower. It expands its customer base, mobile marketing, and app intelligence products, and global presence. Number two, undisputed leadership position. Sensor Tower strengthened its position as the leader in digital marketing and mobile app intelligence through this acquisition. Number three, combined insights. This merger with Data AI allows Sensor Tower to offer customers even stronger and more detailed insights on the digital customer journey. And last, consumer trends. With increasing time spent on digital channels, the combined company is well positioned to capitalize on the growing trend of in-app purchases driven by platforms like Google, Meta, TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, and Snap. Exciting times lie ahead for Sensor Tower and Data AI as they join forces. If you're a customer, reach out to your account director for more information. Not a customer yet? No problem. Schedule a call to explore the innovative digital marketing products they offer. Go to Data AI or SensorTower.com and get on board with undeniably the best data partner in the business.
Investments and M&A. So number one, UGC and modding tool developer Overwolf has acquired US-based ad tech company NitroPay. NitroPay provides ad tech solutions specializing in ad placement, revenue management, and detailed analytics for websites. So fun fact, Overwolf, the modding platform, has raised almost $150 million across four funding rounds. The CEO and co-founder was actually on the podcast back in April 2022. So if you want to listen to that, just Google Deconstructor Fund and Uri Marchant, URI. Anyways, you'll find it if you're interesting. And the full analysis of this deal was actually on Invest Games website. So I just really suggest everybody to get their newsletter, all the deals once a week, you'll get them. If not from here, then at least from Invest Game. Second deal, Ireland-based games tech company Altera has raised $9 million in seed fund round led by Patron. And First Spark Ventures with participation from A16Z's Speedrun and other angel investors. That company focuses on AI development and has already created an AI agent inside Minecraft, which simulates the behavior of real players. I think I saw this at a dinner party. Somebody was showing me, if this is the person that had a lot of tattoos on fingers and everything, then I've seen this because he was talking to... it was an interesting story, but I think I've seen this. It's an AI play. Anyways. Third deal, Ireland-based games tech company Yellow has raised $5 million in seed fund round from A16Z. The funds will support the development of the company's AI-powered 3D character modeling tool. So another Ireland investment, another AI thing. And then third investment to Ireland. I don't know what happened in Ireland. Like, I've never even heard that somebody's getting investment in Ireland. Anyways, Ireland-based game tech company Jamango has raised $2.5 million in pre-seed funding. The funding will be used to develop company's no-code platform for further browser game development. So VCs are really putting Ireland back on the map, like Conor McGregor here. Very interesting. And then, as with every M&A news, we have to finish up with Web3. US-based Web3 game developer Void Labs has raised an undisclosed amount of funding from the usual suspects. You can expect Delphi, Yield Guild Games, etc., etc. The funds will be used to develop a studio's title, Blade of God X. A dark-themed AAA action game available across mobile and PC. So I'll have a little bit of a monologue about Web3, but I can't wait to get the NFTs for Blade of God X play it on all the platforms.
Oh, Chris, save us. Please talk about this other stuff.
Layoffs, employment closures. Unity Chief Product Officer and Technology Officer Mark Witten will resign June 1. He was in charge of the engine business, as far as I understand it, likely as a result of Bromberg coming in. Maybe he felt slighted that he was not put up in charge of Unity. I don't know. Sony leadership changes. Damn it. I should have fucking practiced this.
Someone didn't watch Shogun.
Yoshino will be appointed the CEO of the platform business, and Herman Holst will be appointed CEO of the studio business, and Hiroki So fundamentally, it looks like the Japanese are taking over, right? That's all that matters, right? This is exactly what we expected. Like, after the Americans have run this place for years and years and years, the Japanese are taking over. The studio head, Holst, is interesting choice, but not really that surprising. Playtika eliminates the CRO and COO positions in new job cuts. I would love to hear some dirt on this. I met both of these guys, I think, at GDC a couple years ago. These two have been together at this company for 12 fucking years. Like, they were just like frickin' frack, right? So, like, I don't know. It really seems strange to eliminate these roles. But I'm actually getting a little bit more interested in Playtika moving forward, but that's a whole other conversation. Square Enix lays off workers in Europe and American division. This is the, I hate when people, companies do this, where they announce that they are planning on doing layoffs without actually any plan. So then it keeps people all in limbo and fucking freaked out about their job.
European
but they're
law.
Basically in,
oh, it's
European
law?
Law. Yeah, with law, we have to inform. In Finland, it is 6 weeks in advance. You have to inform that we will be reducing possibly, and then you have to start negotiating with your workforce. It's for companies that are over like 20 people or something. So this is by law that you have to inform before you lay off. And you cannot make any decisions of anybody being laid off for those 6 weeks. It has to be negotiated with the representative of employees. Welcome to socialism.
Oh my God. Okay. No wonder. Okay. Now I'm taking it back. Anyway, so what happened was is they're planning on rebuilding its overseas business division from the ground up, quote unquote. Mm. Structural reforms to optimize costs in Europe and American offices. And they're just basically implementing these changes because of a really disappointing year of games that failed to live up to expectations. Of course, the game, one of the main games that failed to live up to expectations was Final Fantasy Rebirth Part 2, which is certainly not a Western game. So we should hear more about that going forward.
Any idea why Rebirth didn't work? Isn't Final
not
Fantasy VII...
Not enough anime.
I actually talked to a couple of people about this. Is generally when you do a remaster or rebirth of something, the first one's going to do extremely well, but the second one is going to be like, eh, right? Like either you loved it, you hated it, but you tried it, but some people are just not going to come back for the second, right? That type of thing, you know? So it's like, it's kind of like sequels of new type of games. It's really hard to execute against the second sequel. It wasn't like the quality was bad, right? I think they also did a, they did like the Hobbit thing where they fucking dragged this thing out, you know, like for three. Like they didn't need to do that. They should have just made it one and two maybe. So anyway, I don't know.
Got it. Okay. Phil, what other games are in the news?
Well, there's a new husbando. This is a term I was not familiar with. This is the female equivalent of being into games like Nikki Goddess of Victory. It is about, you know, collecting a squad of men that are of the anime art style. And then you play match games. And it's actually got a very interesting match mechanic. It has this wave that comes across the board. So you set up the matches and then they're triggered when the wave comes across. But it's all centered around this husbando theme. So I just to put it in there, like, it cuts both ways. Cuts both ways.
I'm looking at the game. It's not as bad. It's quite mild. Like, I was imagining something absolutely different when you said this.
I mean,
like
it's
12-year-old boys with whale-sized penises.
No. What the fuck? No, I was like Chippendales on like.
Is
all
that
the
what
steroids.
You envisioned?
Yeah, I would be like, that must be it. And I saw this, and then they look kind of like vampires, kind of like what's the vampire? Like what's the what was the this
Twilight
famous film? Twilight. They look like Twilight characters. Boring. It was like, oh, not Chippendales. I'm out.
Well, I mean, so you guys don't understand that women don't necessarily want exactly opposite of men, what men like in anime. It's not mm-hmm. like we want all
too
of
hot
the
to handle?
Visual.
Yes, they want too hot to handle.
Yeah. Too hot to handle.
All right, can we move the fuck on? No more talking about anime. It's over. Let's go.
Squad Busters. This is almost breaking news. Squad Busters reached 40 million in pre-registrations. That's their target. They've already hit their targets. Registration is accelerating. There's only 5 days to the game's launch. I looked up where this stands in the record book, and this is actually the second most. Warzone has the first at 50 million. Call of Duty Mobile had 25 million. And I actually think there's a game that will launch later on for miHoYo called Zenless Zone Zero. That's their next action RPG, and it's already in pre-registration with 2 months to go. And last time I checked, it had 30 million pre-registrations. So I think Zenless Zone Zero will probably end up besting Squad Busters, but it looks like Squad Busters is going to set the new record and will pass Warzone's 50 million. This reminds me of like those pre-order numbers. If you remember way back in the day, everyone used to like go gaga over what the pre-order number was. Mm-hmm. Order was like, what is old is new again. casting deconstruction out soon, right, Mishka? We're gonna be talking.
Yeah,
about
yeah,
this.
Yeah. We have a text coming out from another person that we're working on a podcast. I've been playing every single day after this came out. I fucking love this game. By the way, PUBG, Crafton's PUBG had, I think, 50 million pre-registration.
Okay.
Anyway,
okay.
Like my brain is.
It wasn't an extensive study.
So what's interesting about the what Squad Busters, like everybody's giving ton of kudos to Supercell about their turnaround, like the Clash of Clans campaign with Holland, amazing. The Godzilla stuff with Brawl Stars, overall the growth of Brawl Stars, phenomenal. The Squad Buster game coming out global finally after 5 years hiatus of not launching a game, great. You know, everything is perfect. The people at Supercell and the leadership is of course due to all the praise. But nobody is saying anything about Tencent. And you have to imagine the Tencent, the biggest game company that supports all of their studios in various different ways, I am sure that they had their hand on in a lot of these things, in the way they run marketing, develop their marketing, in the way the Supercell is running their live operation, especially on that front. So I just think that we should also give a little bit of a kudos to Tencent. What they've done.
No,
majority owner has nothing.
Doubt.
No kudos to Tencent at all.
So
no, not at all.
Let me go here. So I don't know Supercell's relationship with Tencent, but at Riot, because Tencent owned mm-hmm. Riot, they were completely hands-off with most of what happened in Riot. Obviously, they publish League of Legends in China, and they were, you know, absolutely involved there. So while they are lovely and they have a lot of resources and they do a lot of things great, one of the key benefits of being a company that is owned by Tencent or a majority owned is that they are hands-off. So I think you actually need to give a ton of credit to the Supercell team themselves for doing... Oh, nope. So Press is going to disagree.
Nope. That's not what happened, though.
Okay.
They were not... They were hands off for a long time, and he managed this thing into the ground, right?
Yeah.
So, on a relative basis, the revenues were down for like 5 years in a row, right? And so, Tencent did come in, and from my understanding, I actually talked to people specifically about
all
this.
Right.
They came in and said, "Hey, you got to pull this shit together, right? And make changes to make these things more like live services with, you know, staff up the live ops, staff up the
yes."
I wouldn't give Supercell 100% credit. I mean, I think it was Tencent putting a lot of pressure on them to get their shit together.
And we talked about this because we've been following Brawl Stars' comeback, is how they decided to go after live service and actually invest in teams again. I actually want to give some credit to these collaborations because I've been chatting with some of my friends in the toy industry, and we noticed in the month of May that the Godzilla toy brand is some of the top performing SKUs in all of the toy industry right now. And for that to come over Marvel and Star Wars and all these other toy brands, I was like, really? Just that movie allowed them to do that? I actually think that because of the collaboration with Brawl Stars, which we know is huge with kids, that's causing the Godzilla brand to get this kind of halo effect to be successful with kids. So I think that it goes both ways, that all of these collaborations are driving some of the success that we are seeing inside of Brawl Stars and driving the success of what's going on. So I think they get credit for that.
I want to be clear. I'm totally giving credit to Supercell for
me too.
Doing what they're doing. They're amazing at what they're doing right now with Brawl Stars. Maybe they bring that to other franchises as well.
They already are. Clash of Clans was the first one.
Maybe it was Tencent should have had more pressure to begin with, right? From the get-go, right? But whatever.
Okay.
It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, they're doing what they need to do. Everything's more or less a
look at this this Holland collaboration with like the world's most popular football star right now, mm-hmm. like in Clash of Clans, who doesn't
As a character.
Who typically doesn't do these kinds of promotions. So it looks like some of the playbook that Brawl Stars is having is kicking over there. Okay. Sorry.
It's a new fucking era for Supercell, dude.
Yeah.
Goddamn new era.
It's next chapter.
Let's give a little bit of a kudos to Tencent. I mean, come on. Like,
okay,
there's
a little bit.
Ton of
okay.
it to give it around.
Okay. All right. So let's keep going. We didn't expect to get held up in quick hits. Stumble Guys has got something, right, Phil?
Yes. So the Stumble Guys creators, who ended up selling it to Scopely called Kitka Games, have soft launched a new mobile title called Battle Guys Royale. I mean, the cojones on these guys to go right back into the arena and do something that is clearly a taken from.
Can I share some inside baseball on
this
one?
Yes.
So I got honey-deed to go to up north to do a podcast with the founders of Kitka. And I was like, that was the only reason why I would fly north from where I am. I was already super north. Came into this event. And then like 2 days before we're supposed to record, they pulled the plug. They said, we can't really do it because, you know, Scopely and this and that. And it's kind of like, we don't want to talk about the development of the game. So they didn't want any publicity. And I was like, okay, so they're very secretive. They don't want to talk about this. And then lo and behold, like less than a year later, they release a much more egregious, like, you know, move on Scopely than doing a DOF podcast that is like, you know, that would have been, you know, gone through the approval of Scopely. So the cojones on these guys. And also, come on a podcast. Let's talk about this new game and Stumble Guys. So to keep
going. By the way, I have to mention one more game announcement. Guild of Guardians is coming out,
yes.
Which is basically a turn-based RPG.
Immutable.
Like a squad-based RPG from Immutable. And this is like Immutable's huge bet, right? So it's an actual real game that is more Web 2, but you add with Web 3 components. And so this is kind of their biggest bet to date of this absolutely massively heavily funded company. So it's one to watch from a Web 3 perspective.
Nice. Okay.
Rule of Web 3 is never to ship, because when you ship, you go down.
Yeah. Unless you're immutable.
I'm afraid. No, it's going to go down.
I have to admit, my expectations are very, very low, but yeah. Like I will play this game. I will like actually do my best. All right, moving on.
So two analytic updates to close the segment. Match Factory, you know, we had talked about this a long time ago. It was from Peak. It had a very weird launch strategy. It seemed to just get out there. It's continuing to scale ever since its launch. It's currently sitting at 2.1 million weekly active users. It's seen steady growth. It's not blowing up Match GDP, but it is still a pretty healthy game, and I don't think it's found its ceiling yet. So we'll continue to check in back.
I think it's going to be 150 to 200 million.
Wow. You know?
I mean, that's an awesome success. That's a nice little chunk of change. Chunk of cheese, as Mishka would say.
Zynga's back, dude.
Chunk of back. Cheese.
Wait, are they back? I'm really curious about Star Wars Hunters. So that's coming out.
Fuck that game.
I know, right?
Game.
Yeah. In June.
Not going to do shit.
June 4th, I remember.
Wait, what a waste of money, dude. How much money they spent on that thing?
Hasn't that thing
never made sense.
Hasn't it been in soft launcher in development for like 3 or 4 years too?
I thought it was already
the most expensive studio.
At least 2 years in soft launch, at least. Yeah. It's well made.
Donna Titans,
I
baby.
Playing.
Let's go.
Natural Motion's got to just stick with CSR. Yeah, but evidently, it's not even the Natural Motion team. But all right, moving on.
AFK Journey, another update there. It's looking okay. Interestingly enough, there seems to be no AFK Arena cannibalization, which blew my mind. It's literally the same title AFK and the same IP. But there doesn't look to be any cannibalization, and it's settling in at maybe $200, $300 million a year. It's kind of sitting around $4 million a week. A net revenue, and again, that doesn't include web stores, doesn't include PC players. But the interesting thing was an interview that the developers of Lilith recently gave, and we won't be able to cover it this week, hopefully next week. It was translated from a Chinese publication. They talk in that interview about hitting the slump with squad RPGs at kind of the 6th to 12th month range, but they don't really provide a blueprint about how this game is going to get over that hump. So hopefully we'll be able to dive more into that next week.
Awesome. This podcast is brought to you by AppsFlyer. In today's digital world, understanding your app's journey from discovery to download is more than just insightful, it's essential. Enter AppsFlyer, the leader in mobile attribution and marketing analytics that allows you to measure the full potential of your marketing efforts, making every ad dollar work smarter. With AppsFlyer, that's your new reality. Dive deep into data-driven insights that reveal exactly where your users come from and how they'll interact with your app. AppsFlyer, where your app's potential meets performance. This podcast is brought to you by Exola. Step into the future of game monetization with Exola. Exola empowers developers and publishers to market, sell, connect, and optimize their games globally. From payment solutions to a full suite of tools designed to grow your game's revenue while fostering a loyal player base, Exola is your game's gateway to worldwide success. With Exola, the world is your playground. Visit Exola.com today and find all the solutions that will help you to power your games into success everywhere. All right, let's get into topics, even though, you know, we've been talking about lots of things. So this is the classic Eric rant.
I've been constantly frustrated with this whole Netflix communication and PR around what their strategy is. Kind of thinking that I actually know something, but maybe I don't. So maybe that's part of the problem. Netflix and Roblox announced that they are launching Netflix Next World, which is a digital theme park on Roblox that expands the world of fans to the favorite films and television series of Netflix. The early access today will feature three of their big franchises, Stranger Things, One Piece, and Rebel Moon. Rebel Moon.
Which we all love here at UF.
Oh my God.
Everyone loves a good Rebel Moon.
Can't wait for the games to come out for Rebel Moon.
Yeah, and then Jurassic World is coming out later. So, okay, first off, right? The general like response to this has been reasonably positive, and I get it, right? If you had a franchise or IP and you were holding all these, you want to license it to as many people as possible, right? That's the strategy, right? That is a strategy, right? And you're targeting this like young demographic, giving your IP a broader appeal. And this would make sense. This would totally make sense in a licensing model, right? Like Disney, right? It's pure marketing. I get it, right? That's exactly what you should do if you're doing this. But this makes fucking no sense for Netflix, right? The Netflix is trying to build a platform, right? A gaming platform. And they are competing for retention and engagement on their platform directly with Roblox because they're on the same goddamn platforms. They're on PC and mobile, right? So if it was a console game license, maybe it would make sense. But even then, it makes little sense because they want to build platform. They want to build retention. They want to build engagement and dollars coming into their platform. So I mean, there is some counter argument to this, I guess. The demographic of kids, you know, 8 to 12, maybe you don't reach them on Netflix, but is that really true? Is that valid, right? I mean, kids are all over Netflix, like similar to all over Apple, you know? That's why Apple Arcade makes sense for kids, right? But it seems like they have a broad audience to market to. What bothers me more than anything is that clearly from this press release, the gaming team had fucking nothing to do with this, right? Like, they were completely out of the loop. There were no quotes from people within the gaming group. You know, they may have been involved tertiary in the execution, perhaps. At most, they were brought in late, if at all, to this process of doing this deal with Netflix, with Roblox. So I just want to be clear here. Licensing content to other platforms is not the Netflix gaming strategy. Full stop, right? That is not the strategy that they set forth with, okay? One of three scenarios that likely came out. One is that the CEO of Netflix and some CEO or executive at Roblox or whatever got together and had a dinner, and they basically said, hey, let's do a digital theme park on Roblox. Sounds good. Let's get it done. Licensing group makes it happen. Game people are with the tail wagging the dog. That's one scenario. Actually, that is sort of the best case scenario because it's a good scenario, but not the best, right? But the other scenarios do not bode well for the future of Netflix gaming. So the second scenario is that some licensing group does what it does, right? They line up the MGs and snort it like lines of cocaine, right? And this would be a very bad sign, huge bad sign, right? Basically, the company has absolutely no faith in Netflix gaming to build content for this demo. So the calculus is the cost of building this content themselves is greater than the losses associated with sending customers to a fucking competing platform, right? I mean, ridiculous, right? The third scenario, which I think is likely the most likely scenario, which again, does not bode well for the gaming group, is this is driven by the marketing group, right? Again, I think even more dire in some ways for the gaming group. This means that an independent silo at Netflix, which has no understanding or more likely don't give a shit about the strategy of the gaming group, are working independently. Right? Or two, the marketing silo has absolutely no confidence in the gaming group to build content for this demo. So that likely means that Netflix is losing faith in the group altogether, right? So this is probably what actually ended up happening. Like, the marketing group could give a fuck about what's going on in gaming. We're going to do what we do so we can attract this younger demo. Fuck our gaming group, right? Type thing. I think it's either one or three, right? But I have no actual direct intelligence here. But I think it's clear from sources that this goes against the core strategy of the group as a whole. And likely none of the gaming guys were even read into this And on top of that, they're like whoring out their franchise to these tchotchke experiences on Roblox, which is actually damaging to the franchises to something. Because what makes this all fucking worse is that the experiences are terrible. They are fucking horrific, right? Their average playtime is like 4.5 minutes, according to some stat. The onboarding, only 40% actually complete the onboarding, which takes 3 goddamn minutes, right? And only 17% of the players are finishing the second quest. So out of all this, they're creating shitty experiences on Roblox, which likely damages the brand. So fundamentally, again, this is not the Netflix strategy. If it was a licensing strategy, if it was Disney, I get it 100%, but that is not what they set out to do. And this is like seems to be kind of the beginning, could be the beginning, signs of the beginning of the end for the gaming group. But I may be over my skis here.
No, I have seen this playbook before. In fact, I lived this playbook when I was at Disney. So my history was I was in the licensing group for the toy division. And let me just take a step back and say, first of all, I agree with you. I think that the gaming group likely didn't even know that this was going on, because this is what happened to me inside of Disney, is there every group is siloed. And I think we all know Netflix culture is each group is allowed to kind of go and do their own thing. You write this paper up and you circulate the paper, but nobody really has the ability to veto other people's stuff unless you've got some really groundbreaking reason. And so my guess is that the marketing team, likely, because this is what hit me in the past at Disney, the marketing team was like, this is going to be great. We need to get kids on our platform. We need to market our IP and we want to go out. What's the biggest possible platform that we could do with brand relevance for kids is Roblox. So a little story time of when I was at Disney, one of the things, the Disney promotions team was responsible for marketing all the movies. And so they would go and do deals with McDonald's Happy Meals. I think hopefully many of you know, you've seen those tchotchke little pieces of shit toys that come with the Happy Meal. And there are tens and tens of millions of these little toys that basically go out for free. And so on one of the movies that I was working on, I had just signed a really big deal with Hasbro to do like a long-term five-year partners on all of the movies. And so we didn't know this. The promotions team comes to us and they're like, can you approve these toys? And we're like, what? It was Monsters, Inc. or Nemo or one of these movies at the time. And I had to go to Hasbro and say, just so you know, we're going to be giving away tens of millions of toys, even though we expect you to sell $10 toys and we get a revenue share off of that licensing fee. Hasbro was so pissed, because it's damaging to the business that they signed a minimum guarantee. They're paying a royalty rate. And they're like, wait, you as Disney just got money from McDonald's to do that deal? Like, fuck you guys. You're giving us a discount. And so we actually had to like go in and negotiate. Okay, how do we kind of make good on this? Then the fucking DVD team, back when DVDs were a thing, did the same thing to us. They would go sell a DVD with a plush toy, a lovely plush toy, for basically, you know, just like a couple extra dollars on top of the cost of the DVD. And again, our licensees like Hasbro were like, we're trying to sell that for $20. You just completely screwed us, plus your whole DVD division, the way that they sell it, it's like a limited, like it's a FOMO offer. And so these are the types of things that happen inside of these big companies where you have these silos with very different goals and responsibilities. This is why you need a franchise manager. Calling back to our transmedia discussion where I'm like, it should be a franchise leader. So a franchise leader is sitting on top of the overall brand, looking at each one of these silos and making the decisions for the best use of the brand, depending on where we can get the most money and the best outcome for the brand and the team. What's happening right now is nobody's doing that at Netflix. Disney, I don't even know if they're doing that anymore, but this is what's missing in this hub and spoke model, someone to kind of make that call, because the poor gaming group is probably like, God damn it, you just fucked us. With, like you said, really shitty experiences. Like, look at the turtle games on there. You don't help your brand when you put a shitty experience on Roblox. I'm sorry, you become a laughingstock with that audience instead of like a great experience. Okay, my rant is done.
And even with your examples, that makes a little bit of sense, right? You want to throw out tchotchke shits at McDonald's and stuff. It's like aspirational to buy the real toys at Walmart, right? Or whatever, right? But The difference here is that they're actually trying to build a service within Netflix, like to bring people to Netflix. And they're literally selling themselves to the devil by sending it out to Roblox. Like, it's a prime example of a big company silos cutting each other off of the knees, you know? And it's brutal. It's freaking brutal, right? So why not syndicate Stranger Things on NBC, ABC, CBS, Max, and Disney to expand the demographic exponentially, right? Why not? Why not do that, right? Because that's your best content. That's your best fucking content. You don't do that, right? And again, when we first started talking about Netflix, this licensing was the safest and easiest strategy, right? This was a criticism from the get-go. Why are they building their own gaming group? It makes no sense. But they made that decision, right? And that's what they're doing. So
I don't think that's fair. That wasn't the Netflix strategy. Like, the Netflix strategy was that games are taking up an increasing share of playtime.
Fortnite.
And that is a long-run threat.
Specifically.
Fortnite specifically, right? Reed Hastings always used to say we compete with Fortnite, right? Because everyone's competing for time. And games are increasingly taking a share of time. And so the game strategy is about games being the end. It's about being an entertainment company. Reed Hastings has said this over and over again. Are we a technology company or an entertainment company? He says, we're an entertainment company. And that is not bound by any form of media. So I think they had honest intentions in games because they saw it as a part of being an entertainment platform. I agree with you, though, that it does nothing to put these games on Roblox. It's bizarre. It's bizarre. And it's like One Piece. They don't own the One Piece IP. Rebel Moon is a disaster. Like, Netflix IP, though, it would be a disaster for them to be licensed there because it's so worthless. Like, Netflix IP is like C grade. It's awful. It's
I don't
so
understand
bad.
How they're doing Jurassic World, which is owned by Universal.
Can I? Okay.
Go
Can
ahead.
I just little thing that I'm because I've been thinking about Netflix games a lot for somewhat reason, but I have been. And with this thing that just came out and I was reading this, to me, it smells like politics and it smells like turf wars inside of corporation. It kind of is like the previous leak. I don't remember what it was, but it was essentially contradicting the Netflix game strategy. Was it on New York Times or something else? But this is just not a leak anymore. This is an action already against the Netflix games organization. And when I was thinking about Netflix games, I was, you know, looking at Sensor Tower for some data as well as the public information. They have invested $1 billion into games to date. $1,000 million. They've acquired Finnish mobile company Next Games, Boss Fight Entertainment out of Texas, a couple of indie companies, Night School and Spry Fox. So I think both are Seattle-based or something. No, one is LA, the other one is Seattle. They shipped over 100 games, out of which majority is either failed free-to-play games that have been stripped out of monetization and put on Netflix, or they are niche PC hits from pre-2020. Like, I think they just launched Hades, which is a great game. But why is it on Netflix? Anyway, I digress. So they reach around 140 million downloads, according to Sensor Tower, throughout this time with the $1 billion. And if you take the GTAs out, it's 1.5 million per download per game on average.
Oh.
GTAs did a lot more, but it really kind of puts the, just take those out.
I hear Adam Telfer in my ear saying, why the fuck are you talking about the history of Netflix again?
Because in order to make the next claim, you have to talk about what happened. So they earned roughly $0 through these investments till date. Also a fact that people love working for Netflix games. Everybody who I've talked to absolutely adore that place. And that is a testament for them. And they pay absurd salaries. Like, we've always joked around. And I got a new update on the salaries that I'm not going to even mention. They are way more than we ever imagined.
Spill the beans. Why hold back? What is it?
No.
What's the new number?
I'm not. I can't because it's a. But I'm very happy for those people. Like, they're
just wink if it's seven figures, eight figures. Whoa.
Anyway,
my God.
So overall, what I'm trying to say is they have a very positive effect on the game industry as a whole. Just like stimulus checks have a positive effect on consumers.
It's like our sugar daddy.
But I just can't see this scenario, any scenario where this is sustainable. So we know that Netflix games, as a data that they provided, is not really working at the moment. They have 147 million subscribers, and less than 1%, according to them, is playing games daily. That's not a lot. We know that Apple Arcade, despite the news that where they had to come out because Neil is shit posting on them, Apple Arcade is not a sustainable business model. It's bundled together with Apple One and it kind of makes sense there. They pivoted to some kind of a content, but it's not what it was supposed to be. It found its own small niche and the organization, to my understanding, is smaller than in the beginning. Xbox Game Pass, we saw the predictions of what it's going to be. It's not working. They're already cutting Bethesda Studios just to cut costs because they can't make this into sustainable service as they're focusing on revenue rather than subscriber growth. So my point is, pouring more money on a failed business model won't make it work. Like, you can't spend twice as much as Apple and say, now it's going to work because we're going to spend, what, more than Apple? Apple has more money than God. And so does Microsoft, by the way. It's not like these are some startups that tried it, and now Netflix comes in with less money than either of two. So tying it all together, I think, unfortunately, or fortunately, however you want to put it, that Netflix games will be restructured in 2025, if not sooner. Because based on these numbers, of course, everything can change, and I hope that everything will change, but it's not really delivering as we're talking. There seems to be turf wars. There seems to be this information that they're already trying to push the game some other groups somewhere else. And I think that the restructuring would just lead to a more compact, a leaner organization, a much more focused organization. I don't think they will exit games, by no means. I just think that they will really focus on driving engagement. I think that the type of games they will be doing is less niche PC Steam hits and more like Word, like Puzzle, themed with their own IP, kind of taking, if you will, a New York Times model with their game strategy. That's kind of like where I land on this one. So it will be focused, engagement-driven organization.
Wake me up when the AAA game comes out. That's the next thing I want to see from
no,
them.
No, that game is evidently in development hell. They're going to have to cancel. I think they're going to cancel.
Oh, no. That was the most fun, weird part of what they're doing.
No. That never made sense to begin with, right?
A AAA shooter out of LA? Of course it makes sense.
On a subscription with no controller input method? That sounds good to
just
me.
Just drop a stimulus check and make it happen.
By the way, I did try Netflix games Oxenfree with the Netflix controller. And what a fucking horrific experience. I mean, it was like awful. Like a controller, every time you change the controller, like it would like lose connection. And like the input lag was like terrible. It's like, no. That's not going to work, guys. That's not going to work. All right. We'll see what the response is from the powers that be. And I'll let you guys know.
Yeah. All right. Let's quickly get through the Xbox topic because it was such a big thing last week. I feel like we need to talk about it. While we talked about Bethesda studio closures last week, we didn't have the Xbox president Sarah Bond's interview with Bloomberg to discuss. This was really covered everywhere. So she didn't really say much, unfortunately, and she sounded very corporate-y, and I mean that in the worst possible way, unfortunately. Chris, did she actually make it worse?
She felt really distant.
It was brutal. Fucking brutal, dude. Like, she was like deer in the headlights type thing. It was bad. It was really bad. I felt bad for her.
I had to go on LinkedIn to figure out, like, who's this person after, like, watching this interview. I'm like, wait a minute. Exactly because of the DR. I'm like, ooh, like, what's going on? I need to see the background. It's like, yeah, it was tough.
So basically the quotes were just complete PR garbage, gobbledygook, right? And didn't really answer the question, right, about why, you know, they got rid of these, like, beloved teams and, you know, blaming, like, industry flatness, you know, shit like that. It was pretty bad. And they got to figure out a way of unwinding this terrible strategy of this subscription business, or it's going to be the end of Xbox. But we're not talking about that today.
I don't even know what the plan B is. What's the plan B for this them?
I know that's the thing. It's really going to be hard to come up with a plan B at this point, but it makes sense to spin this thing off and let it be a standalone company.
Yeah.
Get it out of Microsoft. That's what makes sense.
A lot of the reporting I saw also talked about Matt Booty, who runs the studios. He did some town halls and it apparently made it worse. The gist is that in order to get the cost in line, they had to cancel new projects in development. And the one of those that they canceled was Hi-Fi Rush 2, which is obviously coming off of the highly acclaimed, you know, Hi-Fi Rush, which was really innovative and different from Tango Gameworks. You know, sadly, I think we all know we've been through this. It's much easier to cancel something before it starts rather than letting something go and then, you know, eat those sunk costs. As human beings, we just really have the sunk cost fallacy. If you spend something in, you know, you spend money in it, you really want to keep going on it. And it's difficult for you mentally to really absorb losing all that money. So the interesting but not interesting news was that she announced a mobile store is coming in July. We kind of knew this was coming as part of the merger action. We saw some of the leaks. So this looks like it's a little bit more, well, it's all on the web is what she said. It's a mobile store that is on the web. and it's only going to have Microsoft brands at start. So this is Candy Crush, Call of Duty, and Minecraft. So in my mind, I was like, is this Android and is this sideloading? But maybe it's just web stores, right, Chris?
This is a web store. This is not interesting at all, right? I mean, until they can actually viably move people from the Apple store and the Google store to a new store platform, which is a super tall order, which Epic is trying to do now in Europe. And the coverage of this has been really wacky. And I think part of it's because Eric Seifert had a piece that he wrote recently on Mobile Dev Memo. It's like, they've been talking about creating an alternative app store for years, but this is not the fucking it. This is not it at all. This is not alternative app store. This is a fucking web store for their IPs, you know?
What mobile IPs? How many times can I download Candy Crush? What else do they have on mobile? What else am I going to download? I literally don't even know what else is in the portfolio.
That was my joke, is it's not a mobile app store for acquisition of new games, because 10-year-old games aren't, I mean, although they still are downloading. But I think the point is that Exola should be worried with this news more than Apple and Google, right?
Right. It's just like Playtika moving Wales to a web store so that they get more economics. But they're trying to distribute, though.
They want to control distribution. That is about revenue. They're not trying to replace. They're not trying to build a web store for Candy Crush. They're trying to own distribution again. And I agree, it's not going to work.
But this isn't it.
I agree. This is futile.
And so, yeah, Eric Seifert's title is Microsoft's alternative app store that isn't, which is exactly the point. This isn't an app store.
Good job.
This is just a web store for their IPs for now, until again they come out with their own store app on devices, which is a very Herculean task. For lots of different reasons I'm not going to go into. This is much to do about nothing.
Yeah. All right. Are we going to end it there, Mishka? Or do you want to do your web?
We got too much. No more. Like, after this, how can you follow with a Web3 after an interview like that? Like, it won't. We have to end some interesting topic, a positive topic, with a Web3. You can't like double slam.
Alrighty. All right, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Adios.
You did it. You made it to the end of the episode. As a fan of the show, it would help us out if you subscribe and leave us a review on the podcast service of your choice. More importantly, are you a member of the Deconstructor of Fun Slack group? If you have 5 years or more of games industry experience, go to deconstructorofun.com/slack and apply to join. Join the games industry's best professional community, filled with peers always willing to lend a hand. Or subscribe to our newsletter to get all the latest insights from the Deconstructor of Fun content creators. Thanks for listening.